You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
To the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, August the 27th, 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, we are not live today, but we do have Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson with us all the same from rustjournal.org. Matt, good afternoon, sir. How are you doing?
I tell you, Sven, I am sick and tired of summer. It's my least favorite season. I don't know whether it's the humidity or the bugs. Or the way people dress. I haven't decided which thing I hate the most about the summer, but I'm happy we're at the end of August. I think weather-wise, there's like one weekend in November where I'm happy. Otherwise, I can't stand it. But the heat is just, I can't take it anymore.
Well, think what it's like for the people living in the desert. Think what it's like for the United Arab Emirates and the poor people living in the annexed Palestinian territories, because that's what we're going to be talking about today. The new Israel-UAE-US deal of August the 17th. We've got quite a lot of articles here to get through. I think most of them are from Global Research. And the first one tells us that this supposed stopping of the annexation of Palestinian territories is only temporary. In light of today's normalization agreement between Israel and the United Arab Emirates, Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East warned that the threat of Israeli annexation remains just as urgent as ever. A widely reported statement published today by the United States claims that Israel will suspend its annexation plans in exchange for normalization with the UAE. However, an Israeli official told the Times of Israel that Israel remains committed to annexation and that the Trump administration asked to temporarily suspend the announcement of annexation in order to first implement the historic peace agreement with the United Arab Emirates. And this is what I thought all along, Matt, that I noticed that they've just said that they were suspending it. They didn't actually say they were stopping it. They were just suspending it. And suspensions are always temporary. What do you make of this anyway?
Well, you know whose fingerprints are all over this. Of course, it's Kushner, who was one of the drafters of this. Netanyahu wanted to keep this a secret as negotiations were going on. And I still wonder if there are secret corollaries to this. The day after this was signed, on the 17th and the 18th, the head of the Mossad shows up at the UAE talking about normalizing security issues. But it's nothing new here. Netanyahu has a right-wing coalition to worry about. The settlers have condemned him, but some of them realize this is just, you know, his desire to take 20% of the West Bank. And he said, no, that will go on. This is essentially a big PR operation. But as far as the UAE is concerned, they've been doing this for a long time. Mossad's been all over the UAE. They've been targeting the U.S. CIA and Mossad have been in the UAE targeting Iranians or whatever. They're their big enemy. There's nothing. There's really nothing new here. Most of the Gulf states accept this. The UAE is the most powerful economy. I should say the most diversified economy in the area. They have the probably the best future. You know, they're making a huge mistake, but I can understand from the point of view of their narrow self-interest that being at peace with Israel means a lot of money and a lot of weapons and a lot of support coming from Washington against Iran. Pretty much you could do whatever you want now. If you oppose Iran, you'll get away with it and get American support.
Well, Trump also seems to be a rather large beneficiary of this, as well as Israel. The decision made this week by the United Arab Emirates and Israel to establish full diplomatic relations as part of a commitment to normalize the interaction between the two countries was characteristically announced by President Donald Trump because he is undoubtedly the main beneficiary. With less than 3 months to go until the US national election, the timing of the announcement was fortuitous, as the president clearly needed some good news. There are reports that the agreement will be signed in a formal ceremonial meeting in the White House later this month. The deal, reportedly set up by White House Special Assistant to the President and son-in-law Jared Kushner, will in fact have little impact on the UAE, whose Crown Prince and head of state of Abu Dhabi, Mohammed bin Zayed, was instrumental in coming to an agreement on behalf of all the Emirates. He issued a statement on the understanding reached, stating that, "During a call with President Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu, an agreement was reached to stop further Israeli annexation of Palestinian territories. The UAE and Israel also agreed to cooperation and setting a roadmap towards establishing a bilateral relationship." Of course, this is what Donald Trump has been so pleased about and so proud about, is the fact that United Arab Emirates and Israel are now going to have this roadmap towards setting a bilateral relationship. There's going to be peace between them. But it seems to me here that the head of state of Abu Dhabi here, Mohammed bin Zayed, he's under the impression that all further Israeli annexation is going to be halted, isn't he? But that's not what's going to happen, is it?
Well, Netanyahu has already said this. You know, there's a huge financial reason for this. I don't believe he's deluded. You know, he knows this is just very temporary. Netanyahu has not been shy in that regard. Although I don't see how this is going to help Donald Trump in the election. Most people couldn't point UAE on the map, or Palestine, or Israel for that matter. So I don't see that really having any kind of a huge impact, especially since Joe Biden has also endorsed it. You know, who knows what he was really talking about at the time, but he endorsed what he thinks was this peace deal. Disturbing, though, is, you know, Kuwait accepted it and said it was a good thing. Bahrain, Oman, Saudi Arabia, all of these states, I guess with the exception of Bahrain and, well, Oman maybe. I mean, it was Bahrain who was the first to come out and support the deal. Anti-Israel activists have been cracked down in that country. You know, this is about investment. This is about the future of this area. The oil is going to be running out depending on who you read, 20, 30 years. They need this kind of support. But the Gulf states, I think Iran has everything to do with this, have come together in support of this kind of thing. But remember, this is just formalizing something that already existed. Trump makes a big deal about this, but these entities have been making deals with the U.S. and for a long time. They make deals with Israel too, but they do it in a circular way that it can't be traced back to them. Now, Saudi Arabia has certainly been not been shy about that. So the entire Gulf Monarchy League has all completely supported this. And really only two powerful entities have rejected it, and that is Iran and the Palestinians. To some extent, the settler groups have condemned it, but I think they also realize, and they've hinted at this, that this is really PR. They're hoping that this is going to change the idea of what a settlement is. Well, if the settlement exists under these conditions, it's not so bad because there's a deal and it's going to go in a humanitarian kind of a way. They think of this as a PR benefit for them. So they play the game that they're against Netanyahu, but they realize that this is going to be a very temporary matter, maybe even just after the election. So the whole thing is really based on deception. It's just disturbing about how fast the wealthy Arabs were going to throw the Palestinians under the bus, and it was almost immediate.
Well, I guess their way of looking at it is, well, we've stopped the annexation of the territories. There was this threat that the Israelis were going to go in there and steal all the territory. And now Trump gets to say, well, I put a stop to that with the leverage that I have over Netanyahu. And at the same time, I've managed to get this peace deal. And of course, Netanyahu is thinking, well, I don't mind you saying that. And I can look as if I'm appealing to the liberal types as well. Whereas all along, Netanyahu has said he was going to do this anyway. As usual, the big losers will be the Palestinians, who will now live in a non-country that they inhabit only under Israeli sufferance, an agreement that is now de facto endorsed by some of its Arab neighbours and by the Europeans, leaving them with no friends or advocates. They immediately declared that the agreement is not binding on them. Indeed, little will actually change on the ground in Israel-Palestine. Israel has indeed agreed to further temporarily postpone its oft-stated commitment to annex most of the Palestinian West Bank, a proposition that was already in trouble, both domestically and due to almost universal international censure. Even some Democratic Party congressmen have developed a spine over the issue and were willing to cut military assistance to the Jewish state if the annexation program were to move forward. Now that the word annexation has been dropped, the fundamental apartheid policies pursued by Israel will continue to advance and the illegal settlements will presumably continue to expand. The agreement will also benefit beleaguered Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu politically to a certain extent, giving him some favourable press from liberal Israelis and Europeans, though he will also face a backlash from the powerful West Bank settlers. But at the same time, it must be recognised that he obtained something for nothing, for which he will be praised inside Israel. Annexation was on hold anyway, and now the Israelis will be credited with taking a step for peace, a step that is in fact being endorsed by an Arab country. It will be exploited by Israeli propagandists to lighten the pervasive criticism of Israel as a pariah state and will allow the continued delegitimization of the Palestinian pursuit of justice. The overwhelmingly Sunni UAE was clearly motivated in part by its fear of Shia-dominated Iran and was also undoubtedly subjected to considerable urging by the United States officials around Kushner to help Trump get re-elected. The Gulf countries, for reasons of their own, are very interested in maintaining Trump in power, so the approach was welcome. One can expect that Kushner and company will now exert maximum pressure to get Oman and Bahrain to also line up and recognize Israel, and they might also hope to bring in Saudi Arabia. Israel and the anti-Iran coalition countries have had confidential relationships for years based on mutual hatred of the Persians. Moving forward, any broadening of diplomatic and trade ties could be framed as a grand alliance consisting of the Sunni Arab states and Israel against the greatly feared Iranians, and Washington would undoubtedly supply everyone with the necessary weapons to do the job. So it seems everybody is winning here, really, Matt. I mean, even the Palestinians. It means that their territory isn't going to be annexed. I mean, I'm a bit confused at them saying, well, we're not going to accept this, because surely they would want to accept the fact that there is not going to be any more annexation, even if it's just for a while. I don't think it benefits them to be taking this position, to be just outright rejecting all of this. What do you make of this anyway?
Well, let me first of all correct what I said before. I said there's only two powerful entities. There's actually two more. I think Syria opposing this deal is pretty obvious. But the one that surprised me to some extent was Turkey. Turkey was the harshest of them all, even harsher than the Palestinians. They came out and said that no one can forgive the UAE for this. They're seriously considering breaking all diplomatic ties with them. They may even recall their ambassador. It's just, I mean, they're using the harshest language. Now, speaking of language, you notice how the writer you just quoted there, he says, now that the word annexation has been dropped, not the concept. The concept of the word annexation is, of course, you know, a pretty, you know, controversial concept there. But as an idea, it's still going to be there. This is a PR operation. And I think this is also what Turkey and even the Pakistanis have been saying. There have been demonstrations in Pakistan against this deal. It just seems to be this cult of the Sunni, very, very wealthy oligarchic elite in the Gulf states that fear revolutionary Islam, especially coming from Iran, and are willing to throw the Palestinians under the bus for the sake of a short-term gain. What's interesting, though, is that the Iranians have something like $300 billion of investments in the UAE. There's been a lot of mutually profitable back and forth between those two countries over the years. So the future of that is interesting too. This is something that they had to be very careful about. Now, I don't know if this means that the UAE is going to be enforcing American sanctions on Iran now. That has not come up. the Iranians have gone so far as even to say that if there's an American attack in Iran, the UAE will be held responsible, or at least partially responsible. So many forward bases are there. And now the Mossad is there. And the supreme leader of Iran said that this has now turned the UAE into a legitimate, easy target for retaliation. So I think the only thing that, as far as annexation goes, is that the word has been dropped. Because Netanyahu came right out and said, nothing has changed as far as his plans are concerned. He says that one day, and then the day after, he says, yes, this is a great victory for peace. His coalition may fall apart over this. And don't forget, he still has these corruption charges hanging over him. He pisses off the wrong people. So he's, you know, he's doing this balancing act that I don't even think he can get out of. It's just so you know, the very powerful people in the Arab world are upset with him.
Well, it seems Iran really aren't doing themselves any favors if, you know, they are making these threats towards the UAE, because it does seem as if hatred of Iran has been the uniting factor here. Israel don't like Iran, America don't like Iran, the UAE don't like Iran, and so it seems as if Kushner has sort of worked upon that hatred of Iran to try and unite these countries together, even though they've got disagreements over Palestine. It certainly was dramatic as US President Donald Trump announced in the White House Thursday an agreement by the United Arab Emirates and Israel to move to full normalization. But is it really a harbinger of wider peace in the Middle East? Or rather, something to cause us all greater concern as three of the region's most militaristic and aggressive powers join forces? In reality, this is the latest reminder that American diplomacy in the Middle East remains driven mainly by Israeli priorities and US domestic politics, now made more combustible with the addition of aggressive Emirati policies. One hint about what the world witnessed Thursday was the collection of white men in the room with Trump, including his senior advisor, Jared Kushner, who I would say is not white, but some people do consider the Jews to be white, US Ambassador to Israel David Friedman, again another Jew, and Brian Hook, the US State Department's special envoy for Iran, whose maximum pressure campaign against Iran will go down in history as one of the greatest diplomatic failures in recent history. I guess the point they're making here is that none of them are Arabs. These and other men in the Trump adulation society are defined by their commitment to three factors that have little to do with advancing peace in the Middle East region. These three factors are deep commitments to Donald Trump's personal ambitions, the state of Israel in its current expansionist colony building mode, and an exaggerated enmity towards Iran. And as I say, Matt, I think this hatred towards Iran is the uniting factor, but you're saying that Iran has lots of business interests in the UAE. I guess those would be business interests with the Shiites in UAE, or are they actually with the Sunni there? Can you give us a bit more information on that?
Well, as far as that's concerned, I don't know. They make up a fairly substantial minority in all the Gulf states, with the exception of Saudi Arabia. In Bahrain and Oman, it's a huge group. Because citizens of the UAE are such a small number, and of course the guest workers are so many, actual citizens are a small minority in their own country. That's been the case in the Gulf states for a long time. These guest workers don't really have citizenship, and they're Palestinians in many cases. So that means Iran has a group of people to work on, and who may well rise up against the regime. It's almost like a Spartan situation here, where you have this aristocracy overseeing a huge number of non-citizens who do most of the dirty work. This is the curse of the Gulf states, that this is how they've organized things. If you're a citizen, you get everything for free. The oil pays for everything. But at the same time, you have these foreigners, mostly Palestinians, Jordanians, doing the dirty work, and they outnumber the citizens. Many of these are Shiites from all over the Islamic world. So this is very dangerous for the UAE, especially after the Arab Spring. Now, of course, this could be an actual legitimate uprising for once, rather than one the U.S. creates. If it happens, it's going to be condemned by the U.S. as something that the Iranians have built up. But since such a huge number are Palestinians, they're playing a very dangerous game. And yes, I happen to agree with you that, yeah, the Jews are not whites. They're either Khazar Turks or Sephardim from North Africa. Either way, they're not. And they don't believe themselves to be. But they look it. They can get away with it. So I think that's what the author meant, that there's no Arab presence here. But I don't see Donald Trump benefiting all that much here. I don't think this is going to be a huge issue in the election. The only thing that may matter is, because Jewish money and Jewish power is so great in the U.S., they're paying attention to this. But of course, they're not going to support Trump no matter what happens.
Well, he's been hoping all along that his support for Israel will change the narrative a bit and get the Jews behind him in America, but it hasn't worked up till this date, and I don't see it working in the future. And to be honest, Americans don't seem to be very interested in this at all. On all three counts, a majority of Americans, according to pollsters, do not share those three views. This typifies the trends in Israel and the UAE also, where the public's views do not count. But this is politics in the White House during a presidential election year, where Israel essentially writes the script that Trump reads. Along with the US, the combined policies of these three countries probably have been the primary driver of tension, warfare, death and destruction across the Middle East, with their apprenticed regional mischief maker, Saudi Arabian Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, seeking entry into the club. And I'll just stop there and point out that bin Salman means Solomon. So again, you've got another Jewish connection there with the Saudi Arabian monarchy. The Arab states have suffered a century of erratic development, and recently growing poverty, warfare and authoritarianism, for the most part because their leaders focus primarily on assuring their own incumbency, security and wealth at the expense of their own people's political, economic and civil rights. No wonder we are in a decade of non-stop mass protests to remove the rulers across the Arab region. Sudan, Algeria, Lebanon, and Iraq are the latest examples. Rather than promoting prosperity and people-to-people relations, as promised, this agreement is more likely to spur greater polarization within and among the Arab states, heightened militarism, and perhaps ever more fantastic American interventions. I mean, that could be the point here. It could be that they're trying to stir up the underclass that you were just mentioning there, Matt, and then they can use that as an excuse to go in there. With American troops to clear this up, and also to go against Iran and say that Iran were the ones that sponsored this. Do you think that is a possible theory?
I think it is, and I kind of hinted at it before. You know, I keep forgetting that bin Salman is a very suspicious name. A lot of researchers on our side have been talking about the Saudi monarchy for a long time, people who are far more knowledgeable about it than I am, that they're – because this was essentially installed by the British. It's a very suspicious group of people. Their behavior, the behavior in the 80s and much of the 90s was generally pro-Palestinian, but that changed pretty quickly. The coalition that the U.S. has put together, to be, a faction in India, Taiwan, Japan, Great Britain, and then these Gulf states along with Israel, I'm not certain that this is where the future of the economy lies. Because that goes against Iran, China, Russia, and especially in the Chinese case. Of course, there's a huge faction in India that's not opposed to Chinese investment. You're talking about aligning with a very indebted, unstable group of people. And that goes for the U.S. especially, but it goes for Israel too. They're playing an extremely dangerous game. Now, I think this writer here is a bit maudlin. I think he's... I think these color revolutions were mostly artificial. But this is some of the reason why the Ba'ath Party and the Social Nationalist Party in Syria came into existence, because they knew that these very suspicious oligarchs in the Gulf states weren't worthy of anything. The Ba'ath Party came into existence by smashing the oligarchy in Syria, especially in the countryside. That's what their foundation is. He refers to their own people. The author, not realizing that they're not their own people. This underclass is of a completely different nationality. They're not even citizens. This has been Gulf policy for a long time. Again, Sparta really, comes to mind when I think of this kind of thing. And if this agreement is signed, or if it's implemented, I should say, the U.S. can then intervene, saying, well, we've done everything we could for peace. And look, the Iranians are still aggressive. And so this is all their fault. This is not where we're being forced to do this. And we're here to help the Arabs as much as the Jews. Really, PR is the main issue here.
So they're setting up provocations for the future then. Well, let's have a look at what some of the motivations for the UAE might be. It is less clear what motivated the UAE to act at this time. There is speculation that once peace with Israel is achieved, the UAE will be eligible to buy advanced weapons systems from the US, including the latest military drones. The UAE may have also wanted to strengthen the anti-Iran coalition, while Trump remains the American president, fearing that if Biden wins the November election, he might restore the agreement on Iran's nuclear program negotiated during the Obama presidency but repudiated by Trump. It is also plausible that the UAE is making a move to establish its leadership among Gulf countries and getting out from beneath Saudi Arabia's shadow. It is possible, in order to reach a common understanding of the parties agreed, not to specify what was meant by the word suspend in relation to formal annexation by Israel of West Bank territory. It is also possible that a confidential understanding among the three parties was reached that the annexation freeze would be maintained for at least 6 months, and that during the next 6 months could be ended by Israel with US approval. After 1 year, could be ignored by Israel in moving forward with annexation. Now, I think that's probably true. I think they probably said we'll just leave off the annexation for 6 months until the election's over and they know where they stand, whether they're still there with Trump or whether they've got Biden there. I don't think Biden will go back on what Trump has done as far as the Iran nuclear deal is concerned. I think he will make use of the fact that Trump did that. What do you make of that, Matt?
Well, you know, you heard before, you read before that you have some Democratic congressmen that no one mentions, their names aren't mentioned, that are willing to lessen or suspend military aid if they go back on this promise. We all know this is nonsense. This is posturing. They're not going to do that. And Biden isn't going to change anything, as you said. Neither one, Trump or Biden, are not particularly knowledgeable on foreign affairs. Biden may be a bit more so, but given his mental state, who knows what he thinks foreign affairs even is. The people at the State Department, they're professional bureaucrats. They're there long term. They're far more important than whoever owns the office for a short period of time. They're there for 30 years. They carry out the policy. But it's all in the fine print. They're talking about now all of a sudden it's 6 months. The UAE is saying we're saving the Palestinians from the Israelis. And now you read the fine print here 2 seconds later. And oh no, suspend is 6 months. And then we'll see what happens. And I love how they say with U.S. approval, as if the U.S. dictates to Israel. Israel will do as it pleases, knowing full well that the lobby in this country is so powerful, and in your country too, it's so powerful that really going against it, you take your life in your hands. And so the 6 months, now all of a sudden, this agreement doesn't mean much at all. And you have Netanyahu coming out saying nothing is changing here. But you also have powerful states, as I mentioned, Syria, Turkey, Iran, condemning this, and the underclass condemning this. If it's PR, it's bad PR. And the U.S. will have nothing to do with it. Israel will do as it pleases, and the Americans will follow along as always.
Well, let's finish up by putting this into context. The deal should be seen in the context of over 3 years of Trump administration policies that have tightened Israel's grip on the Palestinians, moving the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, recognizing the Golan Heights as Israeli territory, and creating a so-called peace plan with no Palestinian participation or input. While no U.S. administration has successfully brokered a resolution to Israel's now 53-year-long occupation, the Trump years have been especially detrimental to the Palestinian cause. Palestinian leader Hanan Ashrawi wrote on Twitter that with this deal, Israel got rewarded for not declaring openly what it's been doing to Palestine illegally and persistently since the beginning of the occupation. Indeed, with Donald Trump at the helm and son-in-law Jared Kushner as the primary strategist, even concessions for Palestinians have been done away with. To add insult to injury, while the deal had been couched in terms of a commitment by Israel to suspend annexation of Palestinian territories, in his Israeli press conference announcing the deal, Netanyahu said annexation was still on the table and that it was something he is committed to. The UAE has previously held a position consistent with public opinion in Gulf and Middle East countries that the acceptance of formal diplomatic relations with Israel should only take place in exchange for a just peace and in accordance with international law. Back in June, Emirati Ambassador to the US Yousef Al-Ataiba penned an op-ed in the Yediot Aharonot newspaper, the Israeli equivalent to USA Today, appealing directly in Hebrew for Israel not to annex the West Bank. However, by working out an agreement with Trump and Netanyahu to normalize relations, the country has now made itself Israel's partner in cementing de facto annexation and ongoing apartheid. The UAE's change from supporting Palestinian dignity and freedom to supporting Israel's never-ending occupation is a calculated move by UAE Crown Prince Mohammed bin Zayed, a shrewd Middle East dictator who uses his country's military and financial resources to thwart moves towards democracy and respect for human rights under the guise of fighting Islamic terrorism. His support for Israel cements his relationship with the Trump administration. Trump has already gone out of his way to push billions of dollars in arms sales to the UAE, despite opposition from Congress, because of high numbers of civilian casualties associated with the use of those weapons in Yemen. Matt, what are your final thoughts on all of this?
I think the most powerful aspect of it, and this is a very good article, I think, the real issue here is that given this agreement, when the annexations take place, both the Israelis and the Gulf states will be able to say that these annexations have taken place with our agreement and in accordance with international law, whatever that means. In other words, and this is what some of the settlers are saying, it's changing the whole idea of settlement and annexation now. That because now Arabs are on board, as this guy says, making them a partner with this, it's going to change exactly what annexation means. It's not just going to be Jews taking over Arab territories. It's going to be Israel with this coalition taking over Arab territory. It's going to change the entire thing. And as a PR stunt, it's going to make these seem legitimate to those who aren't really paying much attention. And that's really the frightening thing here. And I think that's the ultimate from Israel's point of view, that's the ultimate reason behind it. From the UAE, it's both Iran and weapons from the West. But as I said before, they're playing an extremely dangerous game. But Netanyahu isn't safe either. So there will be an annexed, 30% will be annexed. But they'll be able to say that the Arabs are with us, therefore it's okay this time.
Therefore it complies with international law, and they signed up to the agreement when they signed up and agreed that they would temporarily suspend doing so. Very clever. Well, we'll have to wait and see what happens. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.